We're backstage at the Mill Run Theater in Niles for a chat with one of the greatest entertainers of all time, a man who made his show business debut over 50 years ago as the baby Marie Dressler clutched to her heart in the silent film Tilly's Punctured Romance. Milton Berle, welcome to Those Were the Days.
Thank you very much. That's the name of the show.
That's the name of the show.
Those Were the Days. Yes, that's true. I started, but I think you got to just you gave me the better of that. It's 57 years ago.
Well, I wanted to be kind.
Well, thank you very much. I was 5 years old, and I was with Charlie Chaplin and Marie Dressler in 1913.
Did you? That was in New York when they made that, right?
No, they made that in California.
The Biograph?
That wasn't the Biograph studio. I did pictures at Biograph, but I worked in Fort Lee in New Jersey with Pearl White. I don't think you remember her, but I think your listeners will. Pearl White in The Perils of Pauline. That was a serial, and I was the kid that they saved from the train. The baby was one of those, crashing pictures with chases and everything. Of course, I was saved, and today a lot of comedians wish I'd never been saved. But that's it started in 1913, Chuck. That's when Mama took me around to all the silent motion picture studios in Fort Lee, New Jersey, and then I went out to California about 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. I was 5 or 6 years old.
That's what I wanted to ask. How did you get involved in movies back in 1913? Your mother
was... No. My mother wanted to be an actress, but in those days, her parents, they thought it was terrible, for a daughter to be in show business. I think the audience right now that are listening to you, Chuck, can hear the background of music
right
backstage here at the Mill Run Theater, and that's Elisa Cashy rehearsing her music for tonight's performance. And she's got a loud voice, and the music's pretty loud, too. But we'll over-talk
that. We'll overcome that situation.
My mother was a detective.
A detective?
Yes, she was a private detective in her younger days and a store detective. She worked at Wanamaker's, Gimbel's, and Saks, all the big department stores. She was catch all the shoplifters. Of course, she had a very easy job. They put her in the piano department all the time. But
is that how you got your reputation for
stealing
jokes? Right?
Stealing jokes. And mother, I guess I showed signs of little talent, making faces in front of the mirror, and watching Charlie Chaplin, who was the rage at that time. And I used to be in. I first started by winning a Charlie Chaplin contest. We had a Charlie Chaplin contest where this was Halloween of 1912 or 13. I was about 4 and a half, and I dressed in my father's clothes, and which were pretty ragged at the time, and I cut up my mother's fur muff that she was carrying, mm-hmm. and put some mucilage and plaster on it and made a mustache and walked around with a cane. I won the contest, and I think it was a 98-cent loving cup, and it cost us $2 to get up to Mount Vernon, New York. We didn't have enough money to get back. And some man saw my mother there, and he said, this kid, I think, has a little talent. Why don't you try to put him into show business? And with the thing that my mother wanted to do, which she wasn't allowed to do, she poured all her desires that she wanted to do into me and her frustrations, and she took me around all the studios. And I started out as a child model for Buster Brown shoes. Do you remember Buster Brown shoes?
Sure.
And I had a Buster Brown haircut and a four-in-hand tie, looked like Freddie Bartholomew of the Stone Age. And she took me around, and I posed for pictures for the Packard Agency and Chamberlain Brown. And these are the days, the year, a little later she came around, was Madge Evans, who was married to Sidney Kingsley. She was the sweetheart soap girl. That's the commercials before television. These were ad posters. Uh-huh. And then they saw me in one of the ads, and they put me in, sent a note to my mother, and got in touch with my mother, and she started me in motion pictures. So I worked in silent pictures, not doing comedy either. I was doing, straight roles.
Through your teenage years, were you in the movies as well?
Oh, I was in movies, I'd say, from 1913 all the way up to 1921, and then I appeared in vaudeville, and I appeared here in Chicago back in 1920, I'd say, at the old theater here, the Palace Theater, the original Palace Theater. Mm-hmm. I was hired at 2 a day. It was the Orpheum Circuit, and then I played the Orpheum Circuit. So if you're talking about those were the days, we're really going back with those days.
You did a television show a long, long time before you first started the thing for Texaco in...
Right here in Chicago. First time I was on television, Chuck, was here in Chicago for a man by the name of F.A. Sanabria. It was called American Television Company, and it was 1929. It was the first time I was ever on television.
I'll test your memory now. Do you remember the name of a vaudevillian you introduced on that television spectacular?
A woman, I think, was Trixie Forganza.
Should I say you're right? You know better than I do. That's the name I have, yeah.
Trixie Forganza. She did an act in vaudeville called Trixie Forganza, Bag of Tricks. She was a great entertainer. And we were appearing, I think, at that time at the Palace Theater in Chicago. And we did this closed circuit. I don't know how many sets there were. There must have been about 18 or 20 sets. And, boy, I remember that studio was hot. It was just murder. They had the hot lights, not cold lights. And that was... Well, it's 41 years ago. It was the first time. People speak to me now. They say, I saw you in television in 1948, which is the first time that commercial television started. Mm-hmm. And I had the great thrill of starting, helping it start. But I say, I started in 1929. They say, you're kidding. And that's true. It started in 1929. It's my first taste of television.
Few people recall that TV was anything at all back in 29.
Well, they were working on it pretty good. Dumont was working on it, especially.
Yes. You went into TV with a vengeance, and you succeeded beyond all expectations of anyone ever.
I don't think it was
TV.
A vengeance. What's the connotation there, Chuck?
Well, what I learned was that you had taken a salary cut from radio to go into TV.
I didn't get any money, if that's what you meant. That's the vengeance. No, I was.
Well, you went in spite of that situation.
Well, I didn't. You opened me new fields, and they didn't have any money. And I think your listeners would be very surprised to know what the Texaco show, first season the show was on from 48 to 49, what the overall show cost below the line and above the line and costs for actors, personalities, and stars, for scenery, costumes, and music. The overall show cost $15,000. Now you can't buy a girl singer to do four bars for $15,000.
Well, we just watched a slice of your rehearsal here at the Mill Run, and you are literally involved in every aspect of the production here. And I know that's the way you handled your Texaco Star Theater, but how could you do in 48, 49 a complete season of the Texaco Star Theater on TV and still do it? Complete season for Texaco on radio.
That's true. Now you got that. You got that. You really put it right down because right on paper. Because no one knows that the first 48 season, 48-9, I did 39 weeks on radio for Texaco on Wednesday, and 39 live television hour shows for Texaco on television.
When did you sleep?
I didn't sleep too much. And the first year, which is kind of surprising, no one knows this, possibly. I don't think your listeners know it. I don't know if you do, Chuck. But we didn't have any writers the first year.
You did the whole thing yourself?
Well, I only remembered what I had done in vaudeville and nightclubs, and we didn't have any writers because we couldn't afford them. And I think my first salary on that show was about $1,700 or something. For an hour show for the first year, just because it was new fields to discover.
Well, that was fantastic. But a lot of people don't really remember that you were a pretty big star on radio even before television came along. You were involved in radio from the 30s right on into
before the 30s. I was with Rudy Valley in 1928 for a year on the Fleischman Youth program. I had my own television, my own radio shows. Do You Like Community Sings, Big for Follies of the Air.
Ziegfeld's Biggest Folly, right?
Yes, that was it. Ziegfeld's Biggest Folly. You got a good research for man. And then, of course, I was in nightclubs and vaudeville and Broadway in the Ziegfeld Follies in Broadway, and I played Life Begins at 8:40 and many, many big legitimate shows. And I was receiving, you talk about vengeance, taking a cut, I was receiving a lot of money in 1946. Which is 24 years ago, nearly 25 years ago, at the place called the Carnival in New York. I was there for about 51 weeks, and I was averaging $12,000 a week those days. So from going from $12,000 a week to $1,700 a week, just because it was a new field and starting a new career, I think that's a pretty big cut. the fellow that's sitting with me, I don't think will ever be cut in salary. I think if there's anything, he'll even go up higher. And I'm very proud, Chuck, to say that opening with me tonight, in their first stage appearance, are four great stars from the very famous Chicago Cubs. I'm referring to Ron Santo and Billy Williams and Joe Pepitone and the great veteran, Mr. Cub himself, Ernie Banks. And when I said he wouldn't take a cut in salary, isn't it? He wouldn't. I don't think he'll ever have to. Step in here a minute. Just sit next to me.
There's Ernie Banks.
Ernie Banks. Yeah, Ernie, Chuck,
well,
you're
welcome to Those Were the Days.
Thank you very much, Chuck.
What about your memories? Can you go back 46 years?
No. No, I can't go back that far. I can go back to 1953 when I joined the Cubs, and those were very memorable days in my career as a major league athlete, and I enjoyed them very much, and I just wish I could revert back to those days today.
You'll never be out of work because you can always drive the bus, can't you?
What bus?
He's on the board of the Chicago Transit Authority here.
I didn't know that. Are you? Well, gee, buy me a bus.
No, I'll give you a free ride.
Free ride.
We have another baseball star right on the other side of us here at Mill Run, and this is
Ron Santo.
Ron Santo.
How do you do?
How long have you been watching Milton Berle on television?
Well, I remember the Texaco Hour all the time. I was a little kid then,
oh,
but I
sure
enjoyed it.
Little kid.
No, but I've always admired Milton, especially since I've been in pro ball. When we go down to Los Angeles and play the Dodgers, Milton's always on the side there.
Now, whose dugout I'm sitting in?
Always the visitor's dugout.
I can't sit in the Dodgers' dugout because I know them too well. And then they yell at me. They say to me, "What the hell are you doing over there in the opposition?" I said, "Oh, listen, if you get back Koufax once in a while and you... They let out Maury Wills, do you remember? And Big D, Don is not with us anymore, Drysdale. But that's, regardless of that, even before that, when Koufax was playing, I was always sitting in the Cubs dugout and rooting for the Cubs, and my wife used to kill me. I got to tell you a story. Talking about those were the days. This is not too long ago, but it's back a few years ago. We were sitting in our dugout seats, you know, by the visitor side, where you were seated, and Ruth, who is an avid Dodger fan, and sometimes, you know, so we don't agree on everything, and I'm usually the opposite, just so we can have a little of that in the family, and I'm not a mollycoddle and milk toast. I say that now until she gets here. There was a big, there was a pop-up, and Ruth didn't want the pop-up to be caught because it was hit up by one of the Dodgers. And I can't remember the catcher, but it wasn't on the Cubs. He rushed over, and he rammed right into the fence of the wire of where we're sitting, and she said, and as he dropped it, she said, "Beautiful!" And he stared at her, looked at her, and she said, "Four spacious skies, four emerald rains." He was going to kill her. And she said, "Beautiful." And he looked at her, and that's what she said. I think it was a pretty funny line. These guys are very good. You're going to watch them. They're just fantastic. Were you sitting here while we were rehearsing a little?
We didn't see the beginning, but we're going to stick around. I guess you're going to go back and do it.
Yeah, we're
going to
run through it again. And I want to tell you, and I said this once before, I once had the Dodgers with me. I had Koufax and Drysdale, Willie Davis, Duke Snider, Maury Wills, Frank Howard. So about 9 years ago, they also lost the pennant that year and ran second. But they were in the first three. Look at Ernie's getting mad at me. I want to tell you about professionals. And this goes for Ron, Ernie, Billy Williams, and Pepitone. Whatever they want to do, they will do great. Whatever their business, when they retire out of baseball, they're going to be great executives. They're going to be open a car agency. They'll be the best because they're disciplined and they're dedicated. And that's what the word pro means. We met each other for the first day. It was last Sunday. And they had gotten the scripts, I think, 3 or 4 days before, not being able to learn it too well. And they weren't nervous or anything. But going into a new endeavor is kind of, it's like me trying to play shortstop. I can't go to my left, right. I can't even hit, can't even bunt. I don't know. I'm a backup catcher, as he used to say. Who said that? Jack Brickhouse last night? Or?
Jack Brickhouse.
Yeah. Anything they attempt to do or will do, they will do the best. They are so disciplined and so dedicated that they want to rehearse, they want to be right, they want to be good. And that shows they're professionals and they're dedicated. And I want to thank them very much. I know they're going to be great tonight.
They will be great tonight. Now, you have the Milton Berle Show out here at the Mill Run with Billy Williams, Ron Santo, Ernie Banks, Joe Pepitone, and your special guest star?
Elisa Cashin. That's the international singing star. She's Israeli, but she sings songs in different languages. She's really tremendous. And we have the very fabulous Amon brothers, who are fantastic grizzly and acrobatic artists, and Leonard Seuss, and some other surprises. And, of course, whoever sits in the audience, if it's Cup or somebody, they'll be up on the theater on the stage and they're on. I'll have them up there saying something. I don't know what the hell they'll say, but they'll say something.
Can we expect the brand of Milton Berle zaniness that we...
I suppose it'll be kind of kooky. It'll be flippant. It'll be aggressive. It'll be wisecracking, a corner-style comedian.
But, you know, there's one thing about you, Milton Berle, that I've always admired, and yet has been your willingness to roll with the punches as far as the changing... audiences are concerned. I don't know if that's really the right word to say, changing audiences.
Could be, no, that's right, attitudes.
But as time has gone on, you have recognized that running around in the dress bit doesn't quite go so much. Now, I leave that
to Flip Wilson now. He's doing in black dresses now, and he's doing it very well, Josephine. I use it once in a while, but I don't do it in person when I in a theater around or a cafe.
Well, we love it. We liked it.
Yeah,
but you're also very contemporary. You have things to talk about. Well, look, here you are with the four Cubs.
I know what you mean. You see, Chuck, I try to keep up with the times, whatever the phrases are and whatever the new bag is, or let it all hang out, or being hip, or... I try to keep my material as fresh as I can, but that's not the only thing. It's not just the words. I think what you're referring is the attitude and the style of the freshness of trying to keep it 1970 instead of looking like 1940. And I try to do that, and it works for me. The only thing is that, again, I will say, and I have to be very sort of not too humble about this, but I am also very, very dedicated. I worry about a light, a piece of music, an entrance, an exit, a joke, if it's an and or a but or an editor, editing a line. And that comes under the heading of being, which is not too good all the time, unfortunately. Fortunately, it is good sometimes. That's being a perfectionist. But I guess in the long run, a perfectionist, you can tell the difference in the polish when it's over, you know what I mean? Because if these guys don't practice every day and you don't have a man like Banks or Santo... doing the jobs that they do, or a Brooks Robinson, or even Johnny Bench, who's only 22 years old. 22 years old, he's kidding. They have to work at it, and I work at it, and I work at it all the time. I sleep it, I drink it, and I think it was Ruth, my lovely wife, who said, the greatest romance since Romeo and Juliet is Milton and show business. And I think the greatest romance since Romeo and Juliet is a guy like Ernie Banks and baseball, or Ron and baseball, because that's their life. And you see, a viewer or a person that comes into a theater to see you, that buys the ticket, or a baseball fan that comes to see Banks or Santo, they don't know and they don't care what they go through. They've got to come out perfect. They've got to be ready for them, Banks and Nano and all the boys. They've got to be, and let's face it, they'd still be in the minors and they'd still be in the Sally League or something. It wouldn't be major league ball players if they weren't that good. And that's the great story about, they said, who is old Milt Pappas, he can't hit. You know what I mean? He's a pitcher. Koufax, don't worry. Any major league ball player that's got a bat in his hand can liable to get a hit, and will get a hit. Maybe not all the time, but if that's not their bag. But you don't make the majors, even if it's in show business or sports, unless you're a professional and you're dedicated.
Well, there's just one thing that you didn't talk about, one love affair that you didn't mention, and that's the love affair between 50 years of people being entertained and fans in Milton Berle, and they can see all that talent, all that 57 years, as you said, of show business wrapped up into one fantastic evening out here at the Mill Run. Thank you, Chicago Cubs, Ron Sando, Ernie Banks, and Mr. Chicago, Mr. Television, Mr. Those Were the Days, Milton Berle.
Thank you very much. Bless you.
Thank you.